So before I begin my sermon this morning, I want to do point out something to you that you may not have noticed. We've sung this song, Open Your Ears, O Faithful People, as a sequence hymn for quite a few times here. But turn back to page 536 in your hymnal, and I want you to take a look at the printing that's at the bottom, that's in really small type at the bottom of the page. And sometimes it tells us who the composer is, who the words are by, its history, when it was written. And I'm going to be describing for you in the opening of my sermon today what the temple experience was like when Jesus and his disciples walked in that Sunday morning. And so do you see at the bottom where it says Torah song under music, Yisrael Boreta? It's a Hasidic melody. And so this is a melody that Jesus and his disciples would have been familiar with 2,000 years ago. So I want to let that resonate with you while I start my sermon this morning. Having heard the trumpet blast on the shofar or ram's horn calling them to gather, a small group of men are on their way to the place of assembly. In that neighborhood, everyone walked and everyone wore sandals. As they walked uphill through the busy street, their sandals raised the dust and their feet became dirty, the hem of their clothing soiled with the grime of the street. But they didn't notice any of this, not the dust of the street, nor the dirt between their toes, or even the soiled hem of their robes, for they were deep in thought, mesmerized by their new teacher. He spoke with such wisdom and clarity, they were caught spellbound in his net. For this newly formed small band of men were mostly fishermen. So they walked up the steps of the place of assembly, perhaps nodding at other men as they passed them on their way in. Maybe they even knew some of them by name. One of them opened one of three doors that led into the space within and held it open for his friends to follow. But just before entering the interior space, they washed their feet in the bath, the mikvah, the place of symbolic cleansing. Beyond was a large space, no chairs or pews, just some mats for the poor to sit on, with a row of stone benches on three sides for the more wealthy. The floor was simple stone, with a raised platform on the fourth wall, where candles stood in a seven-branched candlestick. The reader of the Torah sat on a chair called the Moses seat on the platform, and the scrolls of the Torah were kept in a box just for that purpose. Everyone else, all men, none under the age of 13, stood around and mingled in the large open space, which was many things to this community: school, meeting place, courtroom, and today a place of prayer and teaching. They'd come together to hear the Torah, its meaning clarified by anyone willing to risk explaining the word of Yahweh. It's hard to know what they expected to happen that day. We don't have a record of their conversation or their thoughts. Perhaps they simply intended to go together, to get to know one another better, to learn more about the man who'd called them in the first place. Curious, this man who knew them before he met them, now forming them day by day into a band of men who, ever since meeting one another a very short time before, were quickly becoming followers of the one whom they'd begun to call teacher, Rabbi, Rabunai. An amazing thing, this, they're following this strange man, just like that, simply saying yes when he asked them they wanted to fish for people. Putting their nets down, walking away from the stability of the family fishing business, all to walk and talk and eat and sleep and journey with this group of men who seemed to hang on their teacher's every word. So here they were, this small band of men, at the temple in Capernaum, in the northern land of Israel, surrounded by regulars, listening to the Torah, hearing the psalm recited in Hebrew, waiting for a rabbi to rise to begin the teaching. Can you imagine that day? Imagine their first surprise when their new teacher rises first to speak. I can imagine that they were in shock, deep shock. They must have known he was extraordinary. Otherwise, why would they leave their former lives behind? But he rose and spoke with such authority, such wisdom and clarity, like nothing they'd ever heard before. He wasn't even quoting the scholars. Can you also imagine what those who were standing or sitting on mats around this small band were thinking? So there's a new rabbi in town, and those must be his students, for didn't they all come in together? And where did this rabbi come from, and where did he study Hebrew, and who was his teacher? One can imagine the head nods, the murmurs of appreciation, the amazement at his wisdom, for he was not repeating another's words like the scribes did. Then someone in the back, when did he come in, stands up and cries out, "What business do you have with us, Jesus? Nazarene, I know what you're up to. You're the Holy One of God, and you've come to destroy us." The first chapter of Mark. All of this happened in the first chapter of the Gospel of Mark, which is amazing. One of the things that sets Mark's gospel apart from the others is that Mark is all about action. It moves quickly and starts out with the baptism of Jesus in the River Jordan. At verse 12, we hear Jesus being tested by Satan in the wilderness. And at 16, he calls his disciples to fish for people. Chapter 1, 16 verses in, he's calling his disciples. Mark is not about being a wordsmith, he's a man of action. Today's passage that begins at chapter 1, verse 21, is not so much about what Jesus said. We don't hear any of his words of teaching in the temple at Capernaum. It's about what he said in response to the man, the demoniac, in the crowd in the back. Hearing the man call to him knowingly, Jesus immediately shuts him up. "Quiet! Get out of him!" And the man falls down in spasms as if in a seizure, becoming calm and quiet. Well, when I was writing my sermon for this morning, the only thing I could think of was, holy smokes. Can you imagine being in temple that morning and hearing the comments and seeing the man in the back call out? The people were buzzing with curiosity. Who is this guy? He can command the unclean spirits and they obey? Soon, the story of the rabbi and the healed demoniac spread all over Galilee. Now, there is a moment in worship when we all, even preachers too, wait to hear a word from God that speaks to the darkness of what is holding us captive. A word that will deliver us from whatever might be worrying us for today or tomorrow or next week. Can Jesus offer us a word, a spoken truth, that has the power to deliver us? Can Jesus see that place deep within us that we allowed no one else to see, things we don't want to relive or remember, a pain we've tried to forget, a worry and anxiety that keeps us up at night, the hurts from another that we've absorbed as truth? Because we're pretty good at keeping it all together, aren't we? We're part and parcel of healthy and unhealthy, all mixed up together inside, that sometimes it gets hard to tell them apart. Well, I believe that most of us are here today because we really want Jesus to see us. We want Jesus to heal us from these wounds that we carry. I believe that we want to be freed from the demons that hound us in our sleep and wound us in our relationships. Jesus is more powerful than any of these demons. Jesus brings a newness of life that is way better than anything we can ask or even imagine. If we let him, if we ask, "What have you to do with us?" Jesus will show us what we can let go of, the shame and the guilt and the remorse and our need for control, and he will speak powerful words of wisdom that have the power to heal our deepest, darkest places. But there's a rub. Did you notice that the man convulsed as if he were in a seizure when Jesus spoke with authority over that which lived deep within him? When we let the words of Jesus enter in, when we allow his wisdom and teachings to speak to that which is deep and dark within us, it might hurt. Jesus might convulse our routine like an earthquake. Jesus might have to shake us out of our unhealthy patterns and behaviors. But here's a personal belief and a personal reality for me. Jesus is more powerful than any of these demons. Jesus brings a newness of life that is way better than anything we can ask or imagine. If we ask him, "What have you to do with us?" if we let him, Jesus will show us those things that hold us captive, and he will speak words of healing that will calm and quiet our soul, just like he did with the demoniac. Jesus sees those things that you carry deep within. He knows what's happened to you, who you are, who you wish you could be, the demons that you carry. And even with all that, Jesus seeing who you really are deep down inside, he loves you just as much as ever and for always. He will bring light to your darkness. He will bring healing and wholeness to your brokenness. He loves you enough to die for you. And with that good news, may all God's people say, Amen.